Stem cell science is changing medicine and our understanding of human development. Learn more with the Stem Cell Channel. Visit uctv.tv/stemcell.
So let me introduce myself then. My name is Le Xu, postdoc from Dr. Xin Song Lab from Department of Pediatrics from UCSD. It's my great pleasure and my privilege to be here talking about my recent findings. Today, I will talk about a story about the cellular and molecular mechanisms underlying the cell fate, behavior, and plasticity of two lung barrier tissues. So the background picture here beautifully shows how two lung barrier tissues, mesothelial cells in the green, and the airway epithelial cells outlined by smooth muscle cells in red, sandwich the rest of the lung cells in between. So most of the beauty of nature that we see around us is contributed by varied structure of branching, as beautifully illustrated by all the plants here. So the work from my PhD thesis demonstrated that a highly conserved epigenetic pathway named RNA-directed DNA methylation is involved in controlling branching morphogenesis of plants. As the most evolved and intelligent species on Earth, our human beings are also created in the language of branching, such as the skeleton system here, central nervous system, cardiovasculature, and lymphatic system. They are beautiful, gorgeous branching systems. So the life on the Earth is kind of trying to persuade us that branching is not only the best architecture as physical support of life, but also the perfect scaffold for executing biological functions of cells and tissues. Among all the branching organs in our body, like kidney and pancreas, I am most fascinated about the lung. So this organ is such a majestic organ, closely couples structural variation with distinct cell types and functions. As the airway branching from the proximal to distal, the epithelial cells on the surface of the airway are composed of distinct stem cells and their progenies. At the large bronchi, we have all kinds of cell types, like basal cell here, triangle basal cell, as the stem cell of the major large airway, and the club cell here secrete proteins to moisten the airway. And the ciliated cells are the terminally differentiated cells with the cilia beating to clear debris out of our airway. We also have some rare cell types in our lung, such as Heliolux cell, PNECs, Taft cell, and ionocytes. In the small airway, where the basal cells are still maintained in the human lung, they are largely absent in the mouse lung. In addition, leaving only the club cell and ciliated cells in the small airway, where the club cell function as the facultative stem cells. In addition, there is a small round rare cell type named RAS or TRBIC cells, which is recently demonstrated by three different groups showing that they are present in the terminally respiratory bronchial of human, but not mouse. Adjacent to the terminal airway, recessed alveolar type 1 cell, these thin flat cells, and alveolar type 2 cells, these cuboidal cells. And alveolar type 2 cells are the stem cell to replenish itself and give rise to alveolar type 1 cells here. So how a balanced ratio of progenitor versus progeny cells are established and maintained in the lung are pretty understood. At the very edge of the lung lands a single layer of thin flat cells named mesothelial cells that cover the entire organ. Since mesothelium is only composed of single one cell type, people think that mesothelial is nothing but a quiescent capsule protecting the lung from explosion. My work we'll present today may change this paradigm. So the past 5 years as postdoc, I focus on how lung maintains and restores these barrier tissues in these two major projects. The first project is a hypothesis-driven project in which we study the role of mitochondria in every progenitor versus progeny cell balancing during lung development, adult homeostasis, and injury repair after influenza viral infection. My second project is pure data-driven, in which we performed a single-cell multimodal analysis of lung regeneration after pneumonectomy, which is a surgical model to induce lung regeneration. And we do find that the mesothelial cells can be highly plastic and differentiate into fibroblasts during lung regeneration. So let's begin with my first story. So why mitochondria? Similar as the function of lung in our body, mitochondria is mainly considered as a respiratory machine in the cell that convert oxygen into ATP. This semi-autonomous organelle has its own transcription and translation machinery and is closely associated with the nucleus, which is shown by this beautiful metal tracker staining here. Aside from its canonical role as the powerhouse of the cell, recent studies demonstrated that mitochondria play additional roles in the cell, such as metabolic substrate production, cross balancing, calcium homeostasis, innate immunity, epigenetic regulation, and apoptosis. So it is no wonder that mitochondrial-related defects has been implicated in many lung diseases, such as COPD, idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis, asthma, cystic fibrosis, and lung cancer. However, the role of mitochondria in normal lung development and its turnover, and the downstream molecules that lead into this disease setting is pretty understood. A couple of recent studies demonstrated that mitochondrial-related functions such as calcium homeostasis and the electron transport chain complex or ETC complex integrity play essential roles during the alveolar type 2 cell to alveolar type 1 cell differentiation. Since all of these studies use alveolar type 2 cell specific genetic tools to manipulate mitochondrial function, it is still unknown in a complex tissue which cell type and cell behavior is more vulnerable to mitochondrial perturbation. As I mentioned earlier, our lung epithelial cell, our lung epithelium is composed of diverse cell types with distinct chemical and physical properties. So this barrier tissue provides us a rich setting to test the role of mitochondria in a context-dependent manner. The genetic handle we use as an entry point is a gene named LUNP1, which encodes an ATP-dependent protease specifically localized in the mitochondrial matrix. LUNP1 maintains mitochondrial protein quality control or proteostasis by degrading damaged, misfolded, or unfolded proteins. LUNP1 also maintains ETC complex homeostasis, mitochondrial DNA homeostasis, and the ROS level balancing. Additionally, this gene is ubiquitously expressed in the lung. All of these features allow us to use LUNP1 as a faithful genetic model to interrogate the role of mitochondria in the lung. In addition, LUNP1 genetic variants are found associated with rare infant disease named congenital diaphragmatic hernia, short for CDH. As many of you may know, in CDH babies, the diaphragm is underdeveloped and not fully closed, leaving a hole there, allowing abdominal organs such as liver and intestine penetrate into the chest cavity, which leading to the hypoplasia of heart and lung. Our collaborative study with Dr. Wendy Chang from Boston Children's Hospital demonstrated that LUNP1 is among the top of mutated genes that are repeatedly found mutated in the CDH babies. And the CDH babies with LUNP1 mutation tend to have a higher rate of mortality. By CRI-LOXP system, we conditionally knock out LUMP1 at the early developmental stage of mouse lung. We found that in the LUMP1 mutant, this mutant lung become drastically hypoplasic with the formation of cystic sacs. All the mutant pups die right after birth because short of breath. This strong lung phenotype may explain why CDH babies with LUMP1 mutation have higher rate of mortality. Fortunately, we found that LUMP1 mutant maintains relatively normal structure of proximal airways, including the trachea and proximal bronchi. This gave us an opportunity to study the role of LUMP1 in the airway epithelial cells in these airways. So here, the big question we are asking is, are all lung epithelial cells created equal in terms of mitochondrial function? To address this question, we conditionally knock out LUMP1 in three different settings and test their outcome. During embryonic development, we knock out LUMP1 by Sony Hedgehog CRI, which is a generic CRI expressed in entire epithelial cells during development. During adult homeostasis, we knock out LUMP1 using SOX2 CRI and other cell type specific CRI ER system. During influenza infection, we use SOX2 CRI and calcium 5 CRIs, which drive the deletion of LUMP1 in the adult airway epithelium as well as in the basal stem cell specifically. Before diving into their phenotypes, we first make sure that mitochondrial defects is caused by dose of LUMP1 in the lung, right? That is our baseline. Western blot here shows that components from VTC complex 1 to 4 are all reduced to a certain level in the LUMP1 mutant lung. In addition, by mitochondrial protein fractionation IC, we demonstrated that the detergent insoluble protein as aggregates are overaccumulated in the LUMP1 mutant compared to control. Also, the mitochondrial DNA copy number are also significantly reduced in the LUMP1 mutant. This data collectively suggests that LUMP1 is essential for maintaining a healthy mitochondria in the lung. We next go to the phenotypes. Under normal condition in the trachea airway, the club cells in green and the ciliated cells in red, they abundantly distributed in the airway and intermingled with each other. In the LUMP1 mutant, we find that this club and ciliated cells are nearly completely gone in the mutant, as quantified here. On the contrary, we find that the basal stem cells, they become hyperplasic and become luminal in the mutant airway epithelium, where under normal condition, the basal stem cells stay at the basement membrane and give rise to the rest of the epithelial cells. So this ectopic differentiation of stratified basal cells can be traced back as early as embryonic day 15.5 or E15.5, at which time point the basal cell fit in the airway epithelium was just specified. Consistent with their squamous feature, we also found that the squamous marker gene calcin 13 are highly induced in LUMP1 mutant airway epithelium. So with all of these profound phenotypes, we are wondering, can I find some molecular mechanisms that trigger these cellular changes? From differentially expressed gene analysis here and the gene autology analysis from our bulk RNA-seq study, we found that a highly conserved stress cellular stress pathway named integrated stress response, short for ISR, is specifically induced in the mutant airway epithelium. We confirmed our finding by RT-qPCR analysis, showing that only the ISR stress pathway, but not other ER stress pathway, nor mitochondrial stress pathway are upregulated in the mutant cell. People know that in the ISR pathway, the stress signal in the cell will lead to the phosphorylation of EIF2-alpha, which is a translation factor, activation of which further lead to the nuclear translocation of ATF4, which is the master effector of ISR pathway and a key transcription factor. By immunostaining, we found that the ATF4 is highly induced in the nucleus of every epithelial cells in LUMP1 mutant, as quantified here. After activation of ATF4 in the nucleus, studies show that the cells either go into apoptosis, cell death, or cell senescence phenotype. Instead of cell death, we find that the senescent marker CDKN1A is highly induced in the RV epithelium of LUMP1 mutant, suggesting that its cells go into a cell senescent state. As a result, the proliferative capability of RV progenitor cells indicated by the EDU incorporation in the RV epithelium should also significantly reduced in the LUMP1 mutant, as quantified here. So the reduction of the proliferative capacity of progenitor cells may be the leading cause of the loss of CLUB and ciliated cells during development, and basal cells as a wound response undergoing proliferation and hyperplasia. A brief summary of our embryonic data. Here, we found that mitochondrial LUMP1 play essential roles in the RV progenitor cell proliferation and differentiation. Loss of LUMP1 led to the failed differentiation of CLUB and ciliated cells, but an ectopic differentiation of squamous basal cells in the airway. So, if you look at all of these signaling pathways that are well established and required for normal development of human mouse organs, like Notch, Hedgehog, BMP, much of their function are diminished or even turned off after birth and throughout adulthood. And these signalings can be provoked again as an injury response to repair injured tissue. So here we are wondering if the LUMP1 function is continuously required in maintaining the adult airway homeostasis. To address this question, we use SOX2 CRE-ER to knock out LUMP1 in the entire epithelial cells in the adult mouse. Compared to the control airway, where CLUB cell and ciliated cells are beautifully lining the trachea airway as well as the lung intrapulmonary airway, the LUMP1 mutant mice show a greatly reduction of both CLUB cell and ciliated cells in the adult trachea and the lung airway. This adult phenotype is consistent with what we see during development. In addition, we find there is an ectopic differentiation of goblet cells which express mucin 5B. As we know that goblet cells is a stress-induced cell type and associated with many lung diseases, human lung diseases. On the other side, for the basal stem cells, we found that loss of LUMP1 leads to the basal cell hyperplasia in the trachea airway, and they become luminal. This is also consistent with the developmental phenotype. Unexpectedly, we found that there are multiple basal cell clusters that show squamous in the intrapulmonary airway of LUMP1 mutant, where, as I introduced before, under normal mouse lung, basal cells are largely absent. So, given the fact that the adult airway epithelium, the average half-life of it is about 1 year, so you need 1 year to replenish all the damaged epithelial cells in our trachea and lung. But we do see the LUMP1 mutant phenotype within shortly 1 month. So this drastic phenotype of LUMP1 mutant must be the outcome of some acute cell responses. So we find that loss of LUMP1 do lead to a widespread of cell death signal, as indicated by Caspase-3 staining here. Co-staining with this death factor with other cell type specific genes demonstrated that the over 95% of the dying cells are actually ciliated cells, the terminally differentiated ciliated cells. So here, an immediate question will be, can loss of ciliated cells alone lead to the changes of the rest of the epithelial cell? that further lead to the airway remodeling? This is a really interesting question we really want to look into. Another study from a Raj Kapoor group from Harvard suggests that if you delete acidated cells, one-time deletion of acidated cells in the mouth airway actually have very mild impact on the remaining airway epithelium. The entire airway looks normal, no remodeling. But here we are wondering if continuous loss of acidated cells, as in the setting of our LAMP1 mutant, may lead into the airway remodeling. To answer this question, we use FOXJ1 CRE-ER, specifically knock out LAMP1 in ciliated cells. And we continuously expose these mutant mice to tamoxifen administration for over 2 months. We found that both the club cell and the ciliated cells have a progressively reduction in the mutant mice under tamoxifen injection, as quantified here. In addition, for the basal stem cells, we also see that continuously loss of ciliated cells can lead to the basal cell hyperplasia, which is shown in the trachea as well as in the lung airway, similar to the phenotype of SOX2 CRE-ER LAMP1. So here, we confirmed that continuous loss of ciliated cells can be a leading trigger of airway remodeling. But what's the molecular mechanisms underlying this death phenotype? Why only ciliated cells undergoing cell death? To answer this question, we performed a single-cell RNA-seq from sorted epithelial cells of control and a SOX2 CRE-ER LAMP1 mutant. UMAP clustering analysis demonstrated that the mutant cells are largely segregated from their control counterparts. Pathway enrichment analysis demonstrated that the ISR pathway score is highly enriched in these mutant cells compared to the control cells, as further illustrated by the expression patterns of ISR marker genes ATF4 and TRIB3 here. So it seems like the ATF4 RNA is globally expressed in the entire mutant airway epithelium. However, when we examine their protein products by immunostaining, we find that ATF4 protein can be only detected in the nucleus of ciliated cells. This is consistent with their cell death phenotype, only in the ciliated cells. So, as I said before, after activation of ATF4, people know that it may lead to either cell death or cell senescence. So here, we are wondering if the activation of ISR in the ciliated cells is the leading trigger of their cell death phenotype. To test this hypothesis in a genetic way, we introduced ATF4 flux allele into the LAMP1 mutant background and generated LAMP1 ATF4 compound mutant. We found that compared to the LAMP1 single mutant, the ciliated cell death phenotype is largely rescued in the LAMP1 ATF4 double mutant airway. As a result, the loss of club and ciliated cells also rescued in the double mutant airway. In addition to the basal cell hyperplasia, they become further regressed to the basement membrane, similar as their control mice. This phenotype are quantified here. So now we use genetic model to confirm that activation of ISR is the leading cause of ciliated cell death. But still, it is mysterious for us that why are only ciliated cells more vulnerable to ISR-induced apoptosis and the ISR stress pathway? Why not basal cells? Why not club cell? Only ciliated cell? So this question bothered us a long time until we found a very specific death factor from BCL2 family named the BOC. It is expressed very specific in ciliated cell population. We confirmed our finding by the RNA scope analysis here. So here we hypothesized that the cell intrinsic expression of death factor in ciliated cells prime these cells to apoptotic responses. To test our hypothesis, we generated the LumpY1 bulk compound mutant. We found that the seeded cell death phenotype are largely rescued in the LumpY1 bulk double mutant, in addition to the airway cell phenotypes. Interestingly, we found that the ISR activation indicated by the ATL4 nuclear staining are also well rescued in LumpY1 bulk double mutant. This data suggests that bulk is not only required for seeded cell death, but also it is required for ISR activation in these seeded cells, which is its cell death independent role. So here, a brief summary about our adult homeostasis data. We found that mitochondrial LumpY1 is required for maintaining seeded cell survival during adult homeostasis through repressing ISR activation. Loss of seeded cells alone can be a leading trigger for substantial airway remodeling, including the basal cell hyperplasia and the ectopic differentiation of goblet cells. As I mentioned earlier, some developmental pathways can be reutilized to repair injured tissue. Recent studies from influenza infection in the mouse, also COVID-19 infection in the mouse, in the human lung as well, demonstrated that the basal stem cells can be activated by viral infection, and they largely expand in the airway epithelium, and they can further migrate out into damaged alveoli to form a specialized structure called the calcium 5 positive pots. These pot cells can function as a tissue glue to seal the broken air-blood barrier caused by viral infection. So here, we are curious about if the LumpY1 ISR axis we identified before play a role in this interesting injury repair response. To address this question, we performed mouse-adapted influenza infection to the SOX2 CRE-ER LumpY1 and control mice, and traced the basal stem cells by TD tomato as lineage marker. In this control lung after influenza infection, you may appreciate that the basal cells in green are highly expanded in the airway, and they further migrate out into the damaged alveoli, where previously they are absent there, and clustered there form the pulse cells. However, in our SOX2 CRE-ER LumpY1, we found that these basal cells become stored in the airway. They never migrate out in the damaged alveoli, even though the damage area or the severity of damage is similar between control and mutant. Analysis of these stored basal cells here demonstrated that these stored basal cells actually turn on the expression of ATF4 in their nucleus, which suggests ISR pathway is induced in these stored basal cells. As a result, these cells also become senescent as the staining of CDKN1A here. So we hypothesized that the activation of ISR in these basal cells prevents them from migration in response to viral infection. To test this hypothesis, we applied viral infection to the LumpY1 ATL4 compound mutant. In this double mutant, we found that the stored basal cells in LumpY1 single mutant regained their migratory capacity after viral infection in this double mutant, suggesting that the ISR activation in basal cells actually is the leading cause of their residence in the airways. So here, we additionally found that mitochondrial LumpY1 is required for the basal cell migration after influenza infection through repressing the cell stress pathway ISR. When we talk about all of this mouse data to pulmonologists, they remind us that the airway phenotypes of LumpY1 recapitulate the key features of COPD, which is something we should really look into. So COPD, or chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, is usually caused by smoking or airborne pollution. It is the third leading cause of death in the world, affecting more than 12 million people in the US alone. In COPD airway, the pseudo-stratified airway epithelium are progressively replaced by squamous cells and lost their function. considering that the airway phenotypes of lung PH1 deficient airway share very similar features as COPD patient airway, such as they all bear squamous epithelium, and they all have reduction of CLAB and CD8 cells, and the basal cell and goblet cells become hyperplasia in both settings. We are wondering if lung PH1 expression is altered in the COPD pathogenesis. The short answer is yes. Use immunostaining, we detect lung PH1 protein in the healthy control human lung airway as well as in the lung samples from COPD patient. We find that lung PH1 protein is abundantly expressed in the entire airway epithelial cells of healthy human airway as well as the non-squamous and low-grade squamous airway epithelium of COPD patient. However, when the epithelial cells transition into the high-grade squamous, which indicated by the strong hyperplasia of basal cells here, the lung PH1 protein is greatly reduced in the high squamous epithelial cells, as quantified here. This data suggests that post-transcriptional or translational control of lung PH1 protein may contribute to the pathogenesis of COPD. In summary here, we identified a cellular pathway from mitochondria to the nucleus that controls the proliferation, differentiation of every progenitor cells during development, and controls the survival of terminally differentiated CD8 cells during adult homeostasis, and the migration of basal cells after influenza infection. This work just published on cell stem cell at the current issue. And we do design a cover image. We use Neja, a protection deity in ancient Chinese myths. He's very powerful, have 3 heads, 6 arms when in fighting, to imitate the multifaceted roles of lung PH1 or mitochondria in the lung. Though it's not picked up by the editor, but I still love it. Okay, next, let's move from the proximal airway to the edges of the lung. I will use the rest of the time talking about my second project, which is unpublished and supported by my K99R00 grant. So how do we know our adult lung have the potential to regenerate? In 1995, a 33-year-old woman underwent right-side pneumonectomy for the treatment of lung adenocarcinoma. As this X-ray shows that the entire right lobes are removed, leaving only the left lung lobe on duty. Follow-up studies by CT scan of the remaining left lung in subsequent 15 years demonstrated that both the lung volume and the tissue intensity are progressively increased. This work is the first ever evidence showing that our adult human lung has the potential to regenerate. This pneumonectomy surgery model has been well successfully adapted to the mouse. So basically, you open the mouse chest cavity, remove the mouse left lung lobe, only one lobe in the left, suture it, close the chest cavity. And the remaining right lobes of the mouse lung will undergo compensatory regrowth. Especially the accessory lobes in red have the most volume expansion. Recent studies using this model demonstrated that multiple cellular events take place after pneumonectomy that contribute to lung regeneration, including alveolar type 2 proliferation, which is the stem cell in the alveoli, angiogenesis, immune cell infiltration, and the differentiation of myofibroblast, which is a specialized fibroblast in the lung that promotes lung regeneration by realveolization and receptation. To gain a comprehensive view of all the cell changes during lung regeneration, we performed a single-cell RNA-seq study from the accessory lobes at day 7 post-pneumonectomy, at which time point the lung regeneration is at the peak. Consistent with previous findings, in our single-cell data after pneumonectomy, we found that 82 cells become proliferating here, as well as the appearance of the myofibroblast here. We call it regenerative myofibroblast. Unexpectedly, we find there is a huge expansion of mesothelial cell population in our data sets. Our first guesses are the artifacts. We go back to our lung sample and have a closer look. After pneumonectomy, we find that the single layer of mesothelial cells become thickened and are composed of 4 to 5 cell layers instead, as quantified here. So we are confirming that these cells is real actually, and they may have some biological functions there. So we are so excited about this new cell population and study their biological function. Subclustering of these expanding mesothelial cells revealed that these cells are not homogeneous. They are composed of at least 5 subpopulations. We named them canonical mesothelial cells, which are also present in the control lung, and the primary mesothelial cells, and activated mesothelial cell type 1, and activated mesothelial cell type 2 cells. Also, there is a small population of mesothelial cells that are proliferating. This cell annotation is supported by our following marker gene analysis. Basically, we found that WT1, which is a mesothelial lineage marker, is ubiquitously expressed in all the mesothelial cell lineage. However, the mesothelin and UPK3B, which is the hallmark of canonical and original mesothelial cells, they only expressed in the canonical, of course, as well as the primary mesothelial cells with lower level. On the contrary, the EMT, epithelial to mesenchymal transition marker CDH2, began its expression in the primary mesothelial cells and beyond. The activated mesothelial type 1 and type 2 cells are characterized by expressing tons of secreted molecules, such as insulin growth factor 1. They are more enriched in the type 1 mesothelial cells, and different kinds of chemokines, CCL2, 724, 6CR1, 2, 5. They all enriched in the activated type 2 mesothelial cells here. Because the activated type 1 and type 2 cells, they completely lost the signature of mesothelial cell and gained some expression patterns of fibrotic genes. We name them subpleural fibroblasts. Then we visualize these cells in vivo by using WT1 CRE-ER combined with TD-Tomato as a lineage marker. We find that after pneumonectomy, these subpleural fibroblasts are all lineage traced by TD-Tomato, suggesting that all of them come from the canonical mesothelial cells, consistent with our bioinformatic prediction by trajectory lineage tracing. To confirm their expression of chemokines, we use CCL2 RFP genetic model, in which all cells that express CCL2 are labeled by RFP. We found that after pneumonectomy, subset of this subpleural fibroblast turn on expression of CCL2 at the edge of the lung, and they bear EMT signature by co-staining of CDH2 or NCAT herring here. So before dig into their biological function, we do need some genetic tools to block their formation so that we can test their loss of function phenotype, right? So here the next key question we are asking is, can we find some transcription factors that are driving their differentiation so we can knock out them in the mesothelial cell and test their function of the cell population? To address this question in an unbiased way, we performed a single-cell ATAC-seq from sorted mesenchymal cells of control and pneumonectomy lung. Consistent with our single-cell data, we found still a huge expansion of mesothelial cells here compared to the control, and the exact subpopulation of subpleural fibroblast cells only tell by the chromatin signatures. The really cool thing for single-cell ATAC-seq is you can directly visualize the chromatin dynamics within a cell lineage. So here, as an example, you can appreciate that the chromatin accessibility in the gene mesothelin, which is the canonical mesothelial cell marker, gradually reduced its openness along the differentiation of subpleural fibroblast. On the other hand, the NCAT herring or CDH2 EMT marker gradually opens its chromatin accessibility during the differentiation, as further demonstrated by the feature plot here. Similar as differentially expressed gene analysis in URRA-seq, You can also perform the differentially accessible chromatin analysis by single-cell ATAC-seq data. And you can identify all the open chromatins specific to each cell type here. By allowing the open chromatin to nearby protein coding genes, you can identify DNA regulatory elements of corresponding genes by this method. For example, here we identified a novel DNA regulatory element 20 kilobases downstream of IGF-1. Under normal condition in the canonical mesothelial cell, the chromatin is closed on this DNA element. But during the differentiation of subpleural fibroblast, the chromatin gradually opens, suggesting that it's functional there. We are using CRISPR-Cas9 technology to test the role of these DNA elements in expression of IGF-1. You can further utilize this data to analyze the motif enrichment in these open chromatins. By using ChromVar as algorithm, we identified over 200 enriched transcription factor binding motifs in the open chromatins of the differentiated or activated subpleural fibroblasts. Not all of these genes or transcription factors are expressed there. By combining with our single cell data, we do a primary screening and manually check their expression and binding activity. We do find some very interesting and strong candidates there. For example, the WT1, which is the, as mentioned multiple times, the lineage marker, and it's also a transcription factor. Its binding activity as well as the gene expression are globally active in the entire mesothelial lineage. On the other hand, Twist1, which is the master transcription factor for EMT process, its binding activity and gene expression are only active in the primed and activated 1 and 2 mesothelial cells. In addition, RUNX1 or acute myeloid leukemia factor 1, this transcription factor only active in the activated mesothelial type 1 cells, very specific function. This activity is also cartooned here. So now we are using mouse genetic models to test this function of transcription factors in the differentiation of subpleural fibroblast. So next very, very important question is, can we find these cells in the human lung? Human lung relevance. We do find some clues in the human lung disease called idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis, short for IPF. So IPF is the single most common fibrotic lung disease. And despite the recent progress in treatment, we still have incredible high mortality of IPF. More than 50% of IPF patients die 3 to 5 years of diagnosis. And there's no cure yet for this disease. A hallmark of IPF pathogenesis is this disease pattern. So IPF patients, they always develop fibrosis from the edges of the lung and progressively develop into the center. By reanalyzing the published single-cell ISK data from healthy and IPF patient lung, we do find a very big population of mesenchymal cells that specifically belong to IPF patient. So what's this population? By analyzing their marker gene expression, we found that they do express mesothelial lineage marker WT1, but are absent from the canonical mesothelial marker mesothelin. In addition, they bear EMT signature by express Twist1, and also they tend to express several kinds of secreted molecules, cytokines, such as IGF-1, 6CL1, and 6CL2. Basically, this population of cells recapitulate molecular features of subpleural fibroblast that we see in the mouse lung after pneumonectomy. We also visualized these cells in vivo in human samples. Under normal condition, the human epithelial cell, mesothelial cells are single layer, very clean, covering the lung organ. However, what we see from IPF patient is these mesothelial cells become expanded, thickened, and remodeled after in the disease setting. So we are so excited about this discovery, and we hypothesize that under physiological normal condition, this subpleural fibroblast, which derived from mesothelial cells, may contribute to lung regeneration. However, under pathological condition, these cells can be maladapted and contribute to aging fibrosis. We now are establishing new mouse models to mimic the pathogenesis of IPF in the mouse and testing our hypothesis here. So a summary of my second project, where we identified that mesothelium can be highly plastic during lung regeneration and differentiate into a subpleural fibroblast, which can function as a signaling hub to orchestrate lung regeneration. Future study of my lab will focus on the immediate function of these new cell types I identified, including the role of this subpleural fibroblast in the immune cell infield recruitment during lung regeneration, and the role of these cells in promoting myofibroblast differentiation for the realveolization or receptation during lung regeneration to generate new alveoli for gas exchange. In the third, I will also use the new mouse model we generated to study the role of these cells in the pathogenesis of IPF. In the long run, the ultimate goal of my lab is to unleash the full power of lung regeneration by putting the lung regenerative process in different physiological or pathological perturbations. For example, aside from adult lung regeneration, we will study the lung regeneration in neonatal lung versus aged lung. Also, since the lung organoid in mesenchymal cells is absent in the lung biology field, which is surprisingly because people use lung organoids, but they all come from lung epithelial cells. So we will commit ourselves and work with our colleagues to establish a platform to culture the lung mesenchymal organoids. And if we did that, because many of you sitting here, we can even send it to the space station to test their performance in the low Earth orbit, right? Very exciting. In the end, I will utilize all the knowledge I gained to promote mesenchymal stem cell-based therapy to try to cure many lung diseases like IPF. So in the end, I will close my presentation by giving my sincere thanks to my advisor, Dr. Xin Song, who is the real Song in California, always giving me support and guidance. I will also give my thanks to my three amazing co-mentors of my K9R00 grant, Dr. Zia Brock, who always encouraged me to think out of the box and dream high, Laura Alexander, who is an amazing immunologist, teaching me all things about immune cells, and Dr. Kyle Gorton, who is a master of bioinformatics. All the human lung tissues come from our amazing UCSD lung tissue bank. And also Dr. Wendy Chang from Boston Children's Hospital and Dr. Yufeng Shen from Columbia University. My work was supported by my K99R00 grant pathway to independence from NHLBI, and also my postdoc fellowship from American Heart Association, and also the National Consortium LungMap and HubMap. I believe that never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it is the only thing that ever has. Thank you very much. I'm happy to take any question.
Thanks for a great talk this morning. I have lots of questions, so I'll try to keep it to a couple to start. First is are the susceptibility of different cell types in the lung to ISR activation and to LONP deletion, does it have to do with differences in sort of baseline mitochondrial abundance or mitochondrial activity within those cell types?
Yes, thank you. This is a really, really good question. The short answer is yes. I have some data I didn't show here, but basically we also look for mitochondrial abundance in each cell type by immunostaining of ATP5A1, which is a complex 5-OTC complex, a marker for mitochondrial. And we do find a trend that there are more mitochondrial in ciliated cells compared to CLAB or basal cells. And that is reasonable because, you know, ciliated cells, cilia beating, that is a kind of a high energy demanding activity, right? So that's true.
And then one other quick one, and I'll ask the rest later, is just, do you know which EIF2 alpha kinase is involved in ISR activation in this context?
Yeah, that's also a really good question. So we look at this, and actually it turns out PERK, P-E-R-K, is the upstream phosphokinase for EF2 alpha in our setting. We have some staining data there.
But you didn't see UPR activation,
right? No, so that's very specific ISR activation in lung P1 mutant. Yeah.
Yeah, fantastic talk. I thought that the IPF data were very compelling. And I wondered about the hedgehog signaling pathway, as you talked about, but also the role of BOC and BH3 mimetics. There are hedgehog inhibitors, there are BH3 mimetics. What would be your thoughts about the use of either or one of, you know, the two in combination in the setting of idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis?
Yeah, thank you for this question. So, so our current data, I think we don't have any conclusion about if the Sony hedgehog pathway play a role in the idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis. That is something we are going to look at in our single cell data and our newly established aging fibrosis mouse model and test, you know, using the pharmacological approach, whether the Sony hedgehog form, actually the Sony hedgehog pathway, the ligand do come from epithelial cells, and they targeting the mesenchymal cells, and there is a feedback regulation for FGF signaling feedback regulation. So I think this is a really good idea, and that's something we should really look into.
It's in clinical trials. So there's another question I had, and that's about APABEC. So when you have particulate matter in the air that can activate these mutagenic enzymes called APABECs, this was a series of Nature papers that came out in the last couple of years. It's human specific though, and you did have some lung data on where you see IPF that can be an antecedent condition for lung cancer. Have you looked at C2T mutagenesis? Do you have access to whole genome sequencing where you could look in those IPF patient samples?
Yeah, this is fantastic question. We don't look at this mutation, this gene, but for sure, because we have close collaboration with the tissue bank UCSD, and also we are involved in the lung map, which we map all the DNA mutations, RNA, like single cell, all single cell stuff using our collective tissue. So this is a national consortium project, and I think that's something we definitely have to look into. Thank you.
Beautiful talk. Thank you so much. You started your talk in with the idea, at least, of branching, which I find to be very intriguing. And to kind of connect it to the end of your talk, how do you think the stromal compartment, or even kind of those mesothelial cells, can contribute to those branching phenotype, even from a mechanical point of view? Maybe what are your thoughts around that?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for this. I like this question. So basically, the barrier tissue is caused by branching, actually. If you don't branch, they have barrier tissue. And there are some good study during development. Basically, during development, in the mouse lung, the mesothelial cells actually stay very close with the branching point tip of the lung bud. And it secretes FGF7 to the lung bud tissue and promote the lung growth during development. So that's a very established function of mesothelial cells. So I think definitely, and also mesothelial cells, if you need to trace these cells during development, some of the mesothelial cells during development, they do give rise to fibroblasts in the lung, but not in the adult. And our finding is in the adult, so.
Great. Maybe while we're getting Rachel to ask her question, I'll ask my question. So as a neonatologist who's taking care of lots of congenital diaphragmatic hernia babies, I found your connection between LONP1 and CDH to be very, very intriguing. Now, the traditional thought for generations has been that the primary defect is in the diaphragm. However, the diaphragm forms, the gut comes up and suppresses lung development. Therefore, the later the hernia, the less the impact on the lung. The earlier the hernia, the more dysplastic or hypoplastic the lung becomes. You seem to be challenging that a little bit in that you think maybe this emanates from the lung whenever this mutant gene or failure to express is being expressed. Or are you saying that, yes, it does emanate with this mechanical inhibition, and this is the gene that's playing it out?
Yeah, I thank you, Dr. Snyder. You hit the head of the nail. So for the CDH phenotype, aside from we knock out lung P1 in the lung, we actually use PAX3 Cre to knock out lung P1 in the diaphragm, in the smooth muscle cell diaphragm. And we do see there are the defects in the diaphragm. So my opinion is lung P1 play dual roles. First, it's definitely required for smooth muscle formation in the diaphragm. In addition, to play independent roles in the lung development. So basically, the type of player of lung in CDH babies can be caused by two factors. One is the mechanical stretch, you know, or mechanical limited space and squeeze the lung, and lung become hypoplasia. Another one is genetically intrinsic factor, which make the lung sick and become hypoplasia. So I think my model partially supported this dual factor model of CDH. Cool.
You're up, Rachel.
Wonderful. Great talk. What was really interesting was like the hyperplasia of mesothelium within the IPF tissue. So I kind of have two questions. So one is, do you have a guess of what might be driving this hyperplasia? Is it coming from like outside of the lung? And then my second question had to do with the IPF model. Do you think that this would be something specific for humans, or do you think you can recapitulate this in a mouse model?
Thank you, Rachel. It's an amazing question. So for the first one, the trigger of the mesothelial hyperplasia, right? That's the kidding question. I think I have two answers. One of my hypotheses is the mechanical tension. And actually, there are some ion channels like piezo-1 or piezo-2, especially piezo-2 is highly expressed in mesothelial cells. So this mechanical tension may act on the mesothelial cell and trigger their downstream responses, maybe through YAP-TAZ pathway and leading to their hyperplasia. And another guess or hypothesis is we also found a single cell RNA-seq data I didn't show here. We also found that amphiregulin, which is also secreted ligand, highly activated in the alveolar type 2 cells, and its receptor is in mesothelial cells. So there is maybe a crosstalk between alveolar type 2 cell with the mesothelial cell that activate mesothelial cells and trigger their expansion. The second question is the mouse modeling of human IPF disease. Yes, we do have very exciting data, preliminary data I didn't show here, but we do establish a new mouse model to trigger IgA fibrosis in the mouse lung, while recapitulate key feature of IPF. And we are trying to use this model to study the role of subpleural fibroblast in our setting. So we can talk more about this.
Wonderful, thank you.
All right, well, thanks so much, and congratulations on starting your new lab, and good luck. And thank you all for attending. Bye-bye.
Thank you all, thank you very much.